Hello, Toomies, and welcome to Season 2, Episode 1 of Tombs of Horror. I'm your host, Dustin. Now that I've taken my much-needed vacation, and I'm back in the old dusty tombs, I'm refreshed and ready to start this new season. Despite what you may think, horror and comedy are two genres that actually mix together pretty well. They both rely on pinpoint execution of mounting tension, timing, and payoff. In comedy, the payoff is a laugh. In horror, it's the scares and screams. But in a great horror comedy, it's both. So it's no wonder that horror comedy has long been one of the most popular offshoots of horror. Without further ado, here's my picks for some of the best horror comedies, starting with 2013's A Haunted House.
In January 2012, one couple moved into a new home. The events that followed have never been explained.
How could someone so cute be so stink?
We're investigating paranormal activity at the Johnson residence in suburban Los Angeles.
Yeah, I kicked you and your ghost balls. I got something for you.
Hi, I'm Chip. You must be Malcolm.
Yeah, that's pretty good. How'd you know?
Psychic. I have a lot of powers all over my body.
How far are you gonna go to get this demon out?
I'll do anything.
What is this supposed to do?
This just got weird.
Welcome to the Teledome.
Hey, Ray.
What you taping for, Keisha? We thugs. We can't be on no TV. Can't wait to get my hands on this fool. Show yourself.
No, don't do that.
What happened to your furniture, cuz?
I have a little something to help alleviate some of that stress.
Okay, I'll do it.
Oh my God! That was awesome!
The evil
one. It is an exorcism happening, people!
Oh, she's the most Spider-Man.
I'm Father Doug. I'm here to unpossess you.
Do you know how to connect the cuts?
Tic-tac-toe in your face!
Well, welcome to the Teledome.
Man, breath is kicking. I can only imagine what the kitty smell like.
A hilarious, laugh-out-loud parody of found footage horror films, produced and starring Marlon Wayans. It helps prove that Wayans is one of modern comedy's best. In August of 2012, young lovers Malcolm and Keisha move into their new home together. Right away, things go wrong when Keisha accidentally runs over and kills Malcolm's dog, Shiloh. Malcolm starts videotaping the beginning of their life together and sets up the video camera in the bedroom. During their first night together in their new home, Malcolm is repeatedly woken by Keisha's explosive farting, eventually driving him from the room. The next morning, Keisha informs Malcolm that the house may have a ghost. To prove her wrong, Malcolm decides to have security cameras set up in the house. Later that night, Malcolm tries to fuck Keisha with the camera on, but she tells him to turn it off. Tricking her into thinking it's off, he fucks her with it on anyway. When he's watching the vid the next morning, Keisha points out to Malcolm that the door opens by itself, but he tells her it was just due to the vortex created by his lovemaking. The next night, Malcolm is violently pulled out of bed by the ghost and runs frantically out of the room, leaving Keisha to fend for herself. Malcolm then tries to sell the house, but realizing that he can't sell it in the current market, they hire a psychic named Chip to investigate. it quickly becomes apparent that Chip is a tad, and I use this term very loosely, gay and into Malcolm. Chip eventually says that everything is fine, but when Keisha reveals she sold her soul for a pair of shoes, Chip tells her that she's fucked, and then tries to get Malcolm to join his wrestling team. The next night, Keisha gets out of bed, stands staring at Malcolm for hours, and then starts to dance. She then slaps Malcolm awake, and he follows her into the kitchen, where she starts to eat uncooked food and drinks expired milk until Malcolm restrains her. Next morning, Keisha remembers nothing that happened. On another night, Keisha wakes up Malcolm to investigate a noise, and Malcolm accidentally attacks their housekeeper, who then quits. The two then smoke some pot to calm themselves, and they are joined by the ghost. Next day, the two invite friends over, and they decide to fuck around with the Ouija board to contact the ghost. When it misspells ghost as ghost, the four make fun of it, and that pisses the ghost off, and it scares the two friends off. That night, the ghost drags Malcolm out of bed and fucks Keisha, who thinks it's Malcolm. The next morning, Malcolm watches the tape and becomes upset when he sees Keisha having sex with the ghost. Later that night, Keisha dresses sexy and waits for the ghost to appear again, but he never shows up, so she leaves the room. But when she does, the ghost then shows up and rapes Malcolm instead. Keisha and Malcolm then decide to ignore the ghost, which does nothing but piss it off even more. It later attacks Keisha while Malcolm has headphones on and is unaware of what is going on behind him. In the morning, Malcolm notices Keisha acting strange and out of sorts, so he finally calls in a priest to perform an exorcism, and Chip also rushes in to lend his assistance. During the exorcism, Keisha escapes into the living room and then goes down into the basement. The group then corners her, and Keisha starts crying. When Malcolm reaches out to her, she attacks, and the three beat the living shit out of her, apparently expelling the ghost from her body. The movie then ends pretty much the same way as the first Paranormal Activity movie did. As I mentioned before, this is a fucking righteous, constantly laugh-out-loud, hilarious little spoof of the Paranormal Activity franchise. Is it pretty fucking stupid? Yes. But everyone involved with this knows that and is in on the joke. And everyone's performances are great, particularly Marlon Wayans and Nick Swardson as a gay psychic Chip. Neither of them miss a beat. The only way you probably won't enjoy or find anything to laugh at in this is if you take your horror way too seriously. And if you're one of those people, you definitely need to watch this, laugh, and lighten the fuck up. This was followed by a sequel that, while it did have one or two good moments, definitely didn't come anywhere close to being half as good as this. There has also been rumors of a third installment for quite a while now, but unfortunately, nothing has ever surfaced. This was made for $2.5 million and raked in $60 million at the box office, so it didn't do bad at all. IMDb gave it a 5 out of 10. I usually agree with Rotten Tomatoes, but they only gave this a 9.5, so fuck them. Letterboxd, 1 out of 5, so fuck them too. And I give it a 4.5 out of 5. Next up, 2003's equally as funny, at least to me, Scary Movie 3.
you watch it. 7 days later.
Oh, man.
Will be 1 week from today.
You heard about this videotape? The one where they do it on the boat, and then in the car, and then in the bathtub, and he's like, hey, baby, I love you. And she, no, not that tape.
Three times the terror.
A mysterious crop circle appeared in local farmer Tom Logan's cornfield.
Oh, come on. You know those things are just a hoax.
Call it women's intuition or ESPN or both, but I can tell when danger's near. I just...
Three times the suspense.
What if the aliens could take over human bodies?
It could be any one of these people.
Move slowly toward the exit.
It's happening. I knew it. You'll never take me alive.
I got a dream.
What is your dream?
To have a dream.
Yo, what do we think?
I don't know what I'm doing here. This is totally pathetic.
Where is my daughter?
Are you mad? I am your daughter.
What did you do with Sue?
I didn't touch her, I swear.
I don't believe you.
Please, for God's sake. She's a girl.
Scary Movie 3.
The killer videotape you've been hearing about. Let's roll it again.
The Scary Movie franchise is full of hits and misses, and in my opinion, the only two even worth watching in the five-film franchise are 1 and 3, with 3 being my personal favorite. It opens with two teen girls having a sleepover, talking about a cursed videotape that they both watched. One of them goes to take a shower, and when she returns, she finds the other girl dead. She starts to scream, and it leads into the title screen. We then cut to a scene showing a farm outside of Washington, D.C. Father Tom is woken up by the screams of his young daughter, Sue. After a series of hilarious sequences, Tom and his brother, George, discover a crop circle on their property that says, "Attack here." Meanwhile, Cindy Campbell, who is now a news reporter, reports about the crop circles. She then goes to pick up her psychic nephew, Cody, from school and runs into George, who is picking up Sue at the same time. Recognizing her as a reporter who did the story on him and Tom, George falls for Cindy, and she reciprocates for him as well. He then invites Cindy and Brenda, who teaches both Sue and Cody, to come see him in a rap battle. They go, and while George proves to be talented, through another hilarious sequence, George fucks up and is thrown out of the club. Later, Brenda watches the cursed videotape. Frightened, she calls Cindy over to keep her company, but when Cindy leaves Brenda alone in a room at one point, Tabitha, the girl from the cursed videotape, crawls out of the TV, and in the ensuing fight, Brenda is killed. During Brenda's wake, due to a misunderstanding, George and his friend Malik cause chaos, and in an unsuccessful attempt to bring Brenda back to life, cause her corpse to explode, and body parts flying all over, and hitting mourners in the room. Cindy then finds the cursed tape in Brenda's room, watches it, and then receives a phone call from Tabitha, telling her that she only has 7 days to live, and Cindy calls George for help. He brings Malik and CJ with him, and CJ tells her to go see his aunt, Shaniqua. Cindy does, and Shaniqua and her husband, Shaniqua's husband, Orpheus, watch the tape with her. Shaniqua notices a lighthouse in the images and tells Cindy that she needs to find a lighthouse to stop the curse. Cindy then returns home, only to find that now Cody has watched the tape as well. Desperate to save Cody and others, Cindy goes to work and types a warning into the teleprompter, but her boss cuts in and the reporter reading it fucks it all up. We then cut to a scene with Tom going to check on Sue, but instead finds Michael Jackson, who is in reality an alien, in disguise. As the president visits Tom and George, Cindy finally reaches the lighthouse and encounters the architect, who explains that Tabitha was his evil adopted daughter, who his wife murdered by drowning. But not before Tabitha could transfer her evil onto the videotape. Unfortunately for the world, the architect accidentally returned the tape with Tabitha's evil on it to Blockbuster instead of the copy of Pootie Tang that he thought it was. When Cindy asks him what the aliens have to do with the tape, the architect assumes Tabitha summoned them to help her. When Cindy goes back home, she discovers that her work has been broadcasting Tabitha's tape for hours. There has been multiple alien sightings, and Cody is missing. Cindy eventually finds him at Tom's farm, hiding out with him, George, and Sue in the basement. Tom, Malik, and George go outside to fight the aliens, but discover that they are friendly and are only there to stop Tabitha, having accidentally watched the tape, intercepting it being broadcast, thinking it was Pootie Tang again. Cindy then discovers the well that Tabitha was drowned in the basement of the farmhouse. Tabitha appears and takes Cody hostage after a brief fight. As things start to look grim, President Harris kicks in the door and knocks Tabitha back into the well, ending her reign of terror. An obvious parody of movies that were popular at the time, such as The Ring, 8 Mile, and the fucking terrible Signs movie, this is a laugh-out-loud schlockfest. Sure, there's a lot of hammy and over-the-top acting, but it's supposed to be that way, and the all-star cast, which includes Charlie Sheen, Leslie Nielsen, Ja Rule, Anna Faris, Regina Hall, Queen Latifah, Anthony Anderson, Kevin Hart, and others are all in on the joke and give good performances once again. If you take horror way too seriously, you need to pop this in, relax, chill the fuck out, and laugh it up. This had a budget of $48 million and raked in an outstanding $220.7 million at the box office. IMDb gave it a 5 out of 10, Rotten Tomatoes a 35%, Letterboxd a 2.5 out of 5, and I say fuck you to all of them, and I give it a 4 out of 5. Next up, 2013 star-studded apocalyptic, This Is the End.
Sad!
I'm the best we could ever plan. Jane Franco's having a giant party.
Yes!
Everybody's drunk out.
Oh my god, if I don't fuck Michael Cera tonight, I'm gonna blow my brains out.
What's up, Brianna?
What?
Fucking pale, 110 pounds, hairless, probably has a huge cock.
Don't fucking touch my bum, bitch.
That's a weird face.
So hot.
What did you just fucking blow on me?
Don't worry, it's just heroin.
Are you shitting me?
I'm just kidding, it's cocaine. But that's still very bad.
Is urging people to stay in their homes right now.
Siegel's dead, Krumholz is dead, Michael Cera's dead.
In the bed? It's already going crazy out there, guys. I'm not leaving, okay? I'm a victim. When I was a kid, I had man titties. The bullies held me down. They titty fucked me.
We are actors. We pretend to be hard, man.
Yeah.
We solve this baby shit.
Helicopter, it's gonna be fine. Oh, you okay?
No, I'm not okay! Fuck your house!
Franco!
What's she got to say?
We should just stay in here, fortify this bitch, and take inventory of all the food and shit we have.
We got 12 bottles of water, 56 beers, half ounce sour diesel, 1 ounce of shrooms, CT Crunch, a Milky Way.
Can I have that Milky Way?
No, you can't have the Milky Way. It's my special food. I like it.
I want some of the Milky Way.
I'd be pretty bummed if I don't at least get a bite of the Milky Way.
What you want, son? This is my cane. This is my cane. Get out of the way. What you want, hun?
What the hell? Oh, my God!
Emma Watson showed up.
Give me everything you have to drink.
There are six of us. You cannot rob us.
I'm not fucking around.
Go get the drinks.
Hermione just stole all of our shit.
Crazy out here.
I'm sorry, we just don't know you, man. You could be like a looter or a rapist or a titty fucker.
I'm not a rapist.
You want to titty fuck us?
If you want me to titty fuck you, I will. So good. Oh, you love it. There's something out here.
In a movie where everybody basically plays themselves, Canadian actor I don't even know how to pronounce his last name, comes to L.A. to visit his old friend, Seth Rogen. And upon his arrival, Seth invites Jay to come with him to a housewarming party for James Franco. When they arrive, Jay is immediately uncomfortable with how many people are there, so Seth goes with Jay to get some smokes at a nearby gas station. While there, blue beams come out of the sky and start sucking up numerous people, causing Jay and Seth to flee back to James Franco's house. An earthquake then strikes, causing a sinkhole in front of James's house that kills a shit ton of celebrities pulling cameo duty. Seth and Jay, joined by James, Jonah Hill, and Craig Robinson, all run back into the house, and Jay tells the rest of the party guests that an earthquake has destroyed L.A. They then inventory their supplies. The next morning, they all wake up and discover that Danny McBride has wasted most of their food making them all breakfast. When told what is going on, McBride doesn't believe them until a man tries to get into Franco's house and is decapitated by an unseen creature. To add to everything else going on, tensions begin to grow, especially between Jay and Seth. The others growing skepticism about Jay's beliefs that the apocalypse is happening just adds further fuel to the fire. Emma Watson is revealed to have survived the events during the party and is allowed back into Franco's house, but due to a misunderstanding involving them talking about raping Emma, which Emma overhears, she then robs the guys of their remaining water and then leaves. The guys then break into Franco's basement through the floor to retrieve two jugs of water Franco had stored in the basement, but when refused a second glass of water during dinner, Danny wastes most of the water out of anger, and is then kicked out of the house. Later that night, Jonah Hill is possessed by a demon, and he then attacks Seth and Franco, but they are saved when Jay and Craig subdue the possessed Jonah. They attempt to perform an exorcism, but during it, Seth and Jay get in an argument, and during the ensuing fight, they knock over a candle and start Jonah on fire. Franco then suggests that they go to his home in Malibu to wait things out, but discover that his car is being guarded by a demon. Craig volunteers to sacrifice himself and is taken by one of the blue lights and ascends to heaven, which makes the other three realize that if they perform a selfless act, they can ascend. On their way to Malibu, the three run into a group of cannibals that is now being led by Danny McBride. James offers to sacrifice himself so that Jay and Seth can get away, and he too begins to ascend. However, as the light pulls him up, Franco begins to taunt Danny, So the light drops him, and he is eaten alive by Danny and the other, and the rest of the cannibals, while the other two flee until they run into the devil himself. As Satan attempts to eat them, Jay apologizes to Seth for his wrongdoings and begins to ascend. Seeing that he is leaving Seth behind, Jay reaches out for him, but since Seth has not atoned, he is not allowed. Seth then tells Jay to leave him behind, but he then also begins to ascend, and both he and Jay are reunited with Craig in heaven. There were rumors of a sequel to this, and although all parties involved were interested, nothing has ever surfaced. Many of Hollywood's biggest names, at the time at least, made cameo appearances in this, and the majority of them are a fucking laugh, right? Particularly Michael Cera. I've never really liked him, but he plays a complete douchebag in this movie, and I could see him being that way in real life. I enjoy this movie and still watch it to this day from time to time. I'm not sure that I'd call it a great film, but it is a great watch. It's laugh-out-loud funny, has some pretty graphic death scenes, and is sacrilegious as fuck. So in short, it has everything that makes a great horror comedy. However, the humor definitely it won't be for everyone. This had a budget of $32 to $41 million. The numbers kind of differ. But it made $126 million back at the box office. IMDb gave it a 6 out of 10. Rotten Tomatoes, 83%. 3 out of 5 from Letterboxd. And I give it a 4.5 out of 5. Next up, 1988's mega cult classic, Killer Clowns from Outer Space.
It was a night like any other night. Then something happened.
You see that?
Something different.
It's no shooting star.
Why here? Why now? Why clowns? They've been knocking them dead all over the universe.
What are you gonna do? Knock my block off?
Soon they'll be doing it at a theater near you.
Killer Clowns from Outer Space. You don't need a police bell, you need a psychiatrist. Uh-oh. They want to play games? They're messing with the wrong guy.
What are you in for?
Killer Clowns from Outer Space. It's crazy.
The movie opens with Mike and his girlfriend Debbie parked up at a lover's lane. For listeners who may be too young to know what a lover's lane is, that's where teens used to go back in the day to make out and, well, fuck. Ask your parents. Anyway, while they are there, Mike and Debbie see a strange glowing object shoot across the sky, where it lands in the yard of an old, slightly retarded local farmer named Gene, who believes the object to be, for some fucking reason, Halley's Comet. And he goes to investigate with his dog, Pooh Bear. When Gene arrives at the scene, he discovers a strange metal object that appears to be a circus tent. When Gene investigates further, he comes upon a clownish-looking alien and both he and his dog are attacked and imprisoned in a cotton candy-like cocoon. Meanwhile, Mike and Debbie have also come to investigate the object for themselves. Enter the tent, and they find a large inner structure and discover Gene's body in the cotton candy cocoon. They are then seen by another clown, are shot at with a bazooka that fires scorching hot popcorn, and are then chased off by yet another clown with a living balloon animal dog. Debbie and Mike then go to report what they have seen to a cop, Dave, who is also Debbie's ex, and his partner Mooney. Neither of them believe the two, of course, and when Mike goes to show Dave the tent, he discovers that it is now gone. They then go back to the lover's lane, only to discover that all the other cars are abandoned and covered in cotton candy. Meanwhile, the clowns have come to town, terrorizing and enveloping people in cotton candy and carrying them back to the circus tent / spaceship. One enters the police station and encounters Mooney. Believing the clown is just a teen punk, Mooney arrests it and throws it into a cell. Mike and Dave then return to town, and when Dave goes to the police station, he discovers the now murdered Mooney being used as ventriloquist doll by the clown. It then goes to attack Dave, but he manages to kill it by shooting it in the nose, which makes him spin around and explode. Mike meets up with his friends Rich and Paul, who own an ice cream truck, and are also brothers, by the way, and they drive around town using the truck's PA to warn people about the clowns. Debbie is attacked at her apartment by some younger clowns, and when she tries to escape, runs into some other clowns who imprison her in a balloon and carry her off. Mike, Dave, and the brothers then go to the local amusement park where the clowns have moved their tent to rescue Debbie. The four encounter a gigantic clown that seemingly kills the brothers. Dave then creates a distraction that allows Mike to escape with Debbie. In mortal combat with the giant clown, Dave is able to use the pin on his badge to pierce the clown's nose, causing it and the ship to explode. As Mike and Debbie mourn the apparent deaths of their friends, a clown car drops out of the sky, and Dave and both the brothers are revealed to have survived. This movie is a huge cult classic that has a massive following still to this day. There has been rumors of a sequel to this for literally decades, and while the Sci-Fi Channel was said to be in talks to purchase the film's rights so that they could produce a sequel in 2018, nothing ever became of it, which, to be honest, is probably a good thing, because, to be frank, anything with the label a sci-fi original tends to pretty much fucking suck. To be honest, this is one of those so bad it's good movies. The story is stupid, the acting fucking blows all across the board, and so do the special effects. But it's all fucking great, and it is rightfully a cult classic. Even though it definitely doesn't show it, it had a budget of $1.8 million, and I couldn't find any numbers for how much it earned. IMDb gave it a 6 out of 10, Rotten Tomatoes a 75%, Letterboxd gave it a 3 out of 5, and I gave it a 3.5 out of 5. And that leads us into the final movie of the episode, and that is 2015's Deathgasm.
You know that evil heavy metal that your parents hate you listening to? Those lyrics about hell, demons, and doom. What if I told you it's all real? I know. I was there.
Jesus!
me, Brody. My friends are losers, so we started a band.
After the death of young Brody's father, his mother is sent to a mental hospital, and he is packed up and sent to live with his Uncle Albert. Right away, there is conflict as Brody's metalhead ways clash with Albert's strong Christian beliefs. At school, much as in real life, Brody's fellow students view him as an outcast. Due to his musical taste, and this leads to some vicious bullying, which is mainly instigated by Brody's own cousin, David. There is a bright side, however, as Brody is finally able to strike up a friendship with Dion and Giles, two dorks that are submerged in the fantasy world of role-playing games. He also manages to befriend another metalhead named Zach, and the two, along with Dion and Giles, form a metal band called Deathgasm. Later on, Zach and Brody go in search of Ricky Daggers, a washed-up metal musician. They find Daggers in an abandoned house they break into and steal an album that Daggers is protective of while he sleeps, and then book it. Daggers is then murdered by a cult member that is looking for the Black Hymn, a piece of medieval sheet music that is said to have the power to summon demons. Back at home, Brody finds sheets of music hidden in the album he and Zach stole. He gets the rest of the band together, and they start to play it. And as they start to play it, his Uncle Albert starts to bleed from his eyes, and the lights flicker on and off, so the band stops playing. After a bout of bullying, Brody is determined to get revenge on his tormentors by summoning the demons, so he once again gets the band together and they play the Black Hymn again, this time the whole way through. Which after their amps explode and knock all four unconscious. After they come to again, a series of strange events happen, such as a strange being named Terry threatening Brody in the school's toilet, a teacher bleeding from all of their bodily orifices and then vomiting blood on a student, and Zach's father rips out his own eyes and tries to kill both Brody and Zach, forcing them to kill him in return. Dion and Giles are also attacked and nearly killed by another seemingly possessed person, but are rescued by a girl that Brody has a crush on. Trying to figure out what the fuck is going on, Zach and Brody go to a fortune teller named Abigail, who tells them that by playing the Black Hymn, they have invoked the demon Asawoth, and now all the people living in town have been possessed by his minions, and that at 3 o'clock a.m., Asawoth will merge with the most evil person present. Before she can tell them how to defeat the demon, however, Abigail is attacked and brutally killed by two of the possessed. initially uninterested in saving the town, Brody manages, and, excuse me, Zach is initially uninterested in saving the town and decides to just sit back and watch it burn, but Brody convinces him to help them stop the demon. They go back to Brody's house to get the sheet music, but Uncle Albert and his wife are now possessed, and Brody and Zach kill them. Brody then goes and decapitates his bullying cousin David, who is not possessed, but Brody just does it for retribution. The cult from the beginning of the movie then comes to town, and the weird and strange, apparently evil Terry offers to be the vessel for Asseloth. To shorten things up, everything accumulates in a battle between Deathgasm and the cult. Dion and Giles are both killed, and in an attempt to bring Asseloth into his own body to kill him, Zach is also killed, as well as a demon. The movie ends with Brody and his crush being a happy couple, and Zach's spirit playing a prank on them to make them think that the demon has returned. This movie proves that those wacky New Zealanders know how to make a fucked up horror comedy. Much like Peter Jackson's Dead Alive, Deathgasm is fucked up, vile, gory as fuck, but fucking hilarious and great at the same time. It's also probably the only movie I've ever seen where demons are beaten to death with a fucking dildo. There's absolutely no reason why you shouldn't see and enjoy this movie. If you don't, there's something fucking wrong with you. I couldn't find any monetary numbers for this, but IMDb gives us a 6 out of 10, Rotten Tomatoes an 88%, Letterboxd a 3.5 out of 5, and I give it a 4.5 out of 5. And that about wraps it up for tonight's episode. As usual, you can contact me at darksyde9034 at gmail.com. I also have a new album out. It's called Ravenous, by my band Raped by Wolves. You can find that as well as every other album I've released on Spotify. If you haven't checked any of them out yet, go check them out right now after you're done listening to this. I'd appreciate it a lot. And that wraps it up. I'm Dustin, and this has been Tombs of Horror. See you next week.